Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way.
On this week's episode, co-founders of Origin Media, Stephen Strong and Fred Godfrey, joined Vincent to discuss the future of connected TV, the ins and outs of dynamic marketing, and the risks involved in starting their own business from the ground up.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Stirista's The Marketing Stir. I am your host, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista. It is so great to talk to you all. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And also thank you for, I was at a recent conference. I was at the USPACC. I don't even know if that's the right thing, but it was an amazing conference, ladies and gentlemen. It was called the Celebration Conference, where our own CEO, AJ Gupta, received an award for the fast-growing 100 companies, Asian American owned, at which he is. And so many people came to up to us to say, I listen to your podcast. We love you guys. Well, I love you. It was great, ladies and gentlemen. Also, very special today. The day we are recording this episode marks 5 years of myself at Stirista. One of the greatest decisions AJ's ever made. I remind him that all the time. Why am I saying so many things? He's not on today. That's why I'm rubbing in a little more. My co-host of the Marketing Stir podcast, AJ Gupta, is not here today. He could not make it, so I'm riding solo, but it's going to be amazing. We have an amazing, special, unique show today. Why? You'll see in a moment. But for those of you who don't know who Stirista is and you're listening to this podcast for the first time, thank you. We are a marketing technology company. We own our own business data, consumer data. We help companies access that data to help them get new customers through email, through connected TV, display. Email me, vincent@stirista.com. That is how confident I am. I just gave you my email address. And boy, are you using it. Not for what it's intended, usually. A lot of you trying to sell me. It's okay. I'm not trying to sell you. Just call me. We'll see. We'll work some out. If there's not a fit, that's okay. The reason I say special show, variety of reasons. One, I feel like I know these two gentlemen already. Yep, I said it. Two gentlemen. We have them on. It's rare we have two people. This story, this organization, too great to just have one. You'll see why. I feel like I've known these guys. It's another thing. They're New Yorkers like me, New York, New York adjacent. And one of my coworkers recommended them. You know, that's a good thing when your coworker's like, hey, you need to talk to these guys on your podcast. And I agree. Already chatted with them. You're going to love them. Ladies and gentlemen, let's introduce them. We've got Fred Godfrey, co-founder, CEO, as well as Stephen Strong, co-founder, Chief Operating Officer at Origin. That's right, Origin. Who are they? We're going to find out, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Fred and Stephen. What's going on?
Well, you tell us, but it's great to be here. And as unique as it is for you to be having two guests on, it's also quite unique for us. So we're quite happy. We have a history of chatting together a lot, and we've been told that we should definitely do a podcast, the two of us, because of the amount of crap that we talk to each other. But this is a great opportunity to be talking together to you today. So thank you.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. We had to have both of you on. You're the chemistry insane. I love you too. I would listen to that podcast. I certainly would. So, you know, let's get started. That's the next order of business is you'll see that. Maybe I'll be on their podcast. Who knows? So let's work that out. But Fred, Stephen, let's start with telling us about the story. You know, it's pun intended, the origin story, right? Of Origin. I love the name. I want to talk about how you two met. And then individually after that, tell us about your roles in the organization, right? So Fred, let's start with you. Tell us about how you met Stephen, how this all went down.
Well, I really do call it a lot of it serendipity and a lot of it just terribly bad luck. But I had just moved east from California, having previously just sold a business, to New York, having also promised my wife that I would never be self-employed again because it is so horrible and stressful, to start working at what was then Tremor Video, launching their SSP on a small team. And within about 5 or 6 months, I realized that selling pure play technology wasn't what made me happy. But at the same time, I had secured EW Scripts as a client, and obviously did or said something right during one of those steak dinners, because I then had an offer to go over to them, to the publisher side. And in doing so, encountered the other man here, Stephen, who had recently joined, I believe. I'll let him tell his own story. But from the second that I walked through the door, speaking through my lens, I'm sure Stephen will have his own, I realized immediately that I had walked into an office and made a friend. And, and then that friend was to become a very good friend. That very good friend was then to, not jumping ahead, but to become my boss. And then that boss was eventually to become my business partner.
It's interesting because our story was not a love at first sight story. Fred was basically brought in by our boss at the time, and unbeknownst to me was given all of my accounts, given all of my commissions. And by all facts of it, I should have really disliked Fred, but he's such a nice, interesting, fun person. I couldn't, and we developed a great relationship, but we didn't start on the greatest of footings.
I mean, you did refuse to come in, I think, the first day because you weren't sure you could trust yourself, with this little upstart, this little snot who had just arrived and taken your book of business. But I'm pleased you did come along in day two. And I'll never forget the first lunch that we had together, or the second, the third, the fourth, or the 400 after that. But I'm grateful that you've got the nature to have looked past that as I swum around in your commissions and then started to having a lot of fun together. So really for you, dude, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
How did it go from, and we'll get into your roles in a moment, but I want to learn about, tell us about Origin, what you're doing there, and how it went from, wait a minute, who's this guy, to starting a business together.
I'd love to kick off here because, Stephen's far too humble, to be honest with you, I think, to tell the best story through the Origin lens. But back to us, when we were getting to know each other back in at the end of 2015 and 16, 17 and so on, the one thing that we both realized with each other is that we just weren't the kind of humans that were cut out simply to turn up to a job, get paid, go home. Like we actually... you realize that by day, you've got to kind of enjoy what you do, and you've got to want to do it really well, and for that to be something that existed between us at the same time as being brought in under a recently acquired brand of EW Scripts, Newsy, that they had bought for an awful lot of money and now needed to do something material with. And then to choose a couple of folks like us and one or two others, to be the people that turned it really into something and to give us a really long rope to hang ourselves with, we the world was ours. And where I think Stephen deserves to tell a little bit of the story before the origin story is the biggest thing that we did with that rope, other than hang ourselves, which was a very significant pivot, which was really the one step between him not killing me when we met and Origin.
Like many years, we were in the news business. We were trying to tackle running ads on desktop and mobile and tablet. And if you remember that from 2015, 16, 17, there was a prospect of sort of viewability and dealing with multiple vendors. And CPMs were a race to the bottom. So we had the good fortune of kind of tapping into CTV when it was in its infancy in wild, wild west. And we got to sort of like look at sort of holistically the company where consumption was going and say, hey, desktop, mobile, tablet, we're struggling. How do we launch unconnected TV? How do we double down? And this was this environment and world where the platforms weren't competing against yourself. Now, if you launch an app on Roku or Amazon, they're competing for the same eyeballs. Most of the ads I get on Roku are for things on Roku. So we're able to pave this really unique path on connected TV. And I remember vividly, and I forget the year, Fred and I were taking a stroll on a beautiful day in Bryant Park in New York City and said, like, what is next for us, right? We built this amazing business. Again, we're in a big corporation. I don't know if the right word is hitting resistance, but like, you mean you guys are doing this, stay in your lane. And we're like, we have all these ideas and what do we do with them? And that's kind of the day and moment where the sparkle of Origin, not yet named Origin, was born.
We always took those walks around Bryant Park or around the Diamond District. We're like, what can be done better? At the end of the day, we were looking at a business that was at an industry that was blossoming, even though it was nascent. And we said, connected TV is the future of television. That's the first thing that we realized, I think, very, very early on as individuals. But brands deserve more or better or different than just simply transferring a 7-decade-old creative rulebook to this new, digitally delivered platform in people's living rooms. And that was where our ideas got just a little bigger than EW, I think, really wanted to be involved with. And that was what led to Origin, which is, in a sentence, what Origin is. We believed enough that the technology that underpins connected TV shouldn't just serve the content that's being served and all of the pipes and the data and all of those capabilities. The same technology should be underpinning creative capabilities as well, fundamentally. If you look at how people have got so used to advertising and their creatives being so responsive and so agile and so dynamic on every other screen through social, mobile, desktop, tablets and everything, it can be doing the same thing on connected TV, albeit differently and with a different set of rules. And that's what Origin is. We've spent the last 5 years, as it's your 5th anniversary at Starista, it's our, in come July, Origin will be turning 5. So 5 is the magic number. And what we've been doing since, the end of 2019 is building both a creative business and a technology business. So Origin is creative technology. And between the two, we have built and brought to market a number of incredibly different, agile and dynamic creative ad formats that either media buyers can use to elevate or to help bolster up a certain objective, or the creative teams can use to make their life easier and their creatives more agile, or even the brands themselves can use when they don't necessarily want to put too much of their resources into a single creative to go out to the entire world. That's what we do. We build incredibly dynamic creative formats for people who have ads and want to make them better, or for people that don't have ads but want something affordable and dynamic.
Let's stay on that for a second, Fred, because you, like you said, your company focuses on building ad formats instead of clickable ads.
Correct.
Why this approach, and what are the benefits of that for brands?
Well, I don't want to be doing all the talking here, but for us, something that was very important to us on day one was seeing how big the mountain was to climb to make connected TV, or TV2, as we sometimes call it, more than just the awareness play, because we saw early on that pretty soon expectations were going to go far, far beyond awareness. To solve this problem as a little bootstrap business, we needed to be incredibly laser focused in what we did and the problems that we went to approach and solve. So that ruled out every other screen. And it also ruled out the concept of going and competing with the Leviathans that make SDKs for clickably interactive ads. Instead, what we saw was something that could sit in the back end fundamentally and simply create more immersive, more engaging, and more entertaining content-like experiences that contain far more of the information that these brands knew get the attention of the viewer, and also just gave them the ability to say more in the living room rather than just target more. Understand this is that audience this year or this demographic. Let's speak to them because we know they're there. Let's let the creative message actually do the talking and not just assume that because we know where they are, that they're going to be more receptive. So it was always about the living room. We did a couple of years ago expand almost accidentally into digital out of home, but it is nevertheless the non-clickable screen, and everything that we do focuses around that lean back experience where we create or we leverage the need for a value exchange and actually to immerse them like they would be in the show that they're watching. Stephen, I've left out like 600 things that are quite important to point out, I reckon.
When we were building the technology, we wanted it to be really sort of scalable and play into flat assets. So if someone was integrating us from a demand or supply side, we could do it seamlessly. So there were no restraints in terms of launching a depth and wide supply portfolio.
And let's talk about this for a moment, right? So this is 2019, as we're talking about five-year anniversaries. Connected TV there, right? Happening. But then the pandemic happened. And so many people watching at home. So many people, the business executive is at home now, right? He or she is there. So what did that do to the way your customers reacted to Origin? What did that do to your business in a way?
Well, in one way, it almost killed us. But once we got over the no one spending hump, it was quite effective, right, Stephen? Sorry, you were going to say something.
I was going to say, for anyone that was still a naysayer around CTV and its acceleration and its importance in the space, that changed it, right? Because to your point, everyone was at home. I mean, when we launched the company 5 years ago, like Disney Plus didn't exist, Paramount Plus, like none of these streaming players existed in the play in the space. And like it was interesting seeing viewership sort of like go like this and then sort of like even out. But I mean, even though we started this business, I think 3 months before the first case of COVID was diagnosed, and like the timing was excellent in some regards, because again, like there was this huge spike, and a lot of our work in our previous roles was educating people on CTV, and the pandemic sort of did that for us to some extent, because people were really comfortable with the platform, understood it, and really wanted to get on and test if they already weren't buying a connected TV.
You know, and I want to get back before I want to talk about a different awesome, you know, solution in Slingshot, but I want to talk to you about, let's take a step back, because something I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. Both of you, right, at a large organization, established, right? Big company. How was that conversation with your significant others? Like, hey, you know that guy who doesn't like me, and or you know that person at the office I don't like? We're gonna start a business together. What were those conversations like? Stephen, I'll start with you.
I have a knack for making big career changes when I have a young baby at home. So when I joined Newsy, my wife was 8 months pregnant. And then when I started Origin with Fred, I had a 3-month-old at home. And one could argue, based on logic and sleep cycles, the timing was really poor. The funny thing is, I mean, I was making a lot of money. I had great health insurance, and like the timing was really awful. And I'll let Fred tell this part of the story. But like my wife basically subjected Fred to a pretty significant interrogation. To make sure that she had all the right information that she was comfortable with. And like that was important.
I was going to call it an interview, but interrogation is a far better word. I've been around the block here a couple of times before, Vincent. And, you know, in 2011, I had to petition my wife, who I would literally just married and bought a flat with in London, to let me emigrate to California. And, you know, and that required her having to give up her job or think about a new lifestyle. And I think when I was younger and I didn't necessarily take it as seriously or understand it from the other side as much as I should have, although to be fair, I hadn't even finished saying California when she had packed her bags. So, you know, like I think that was lucky. But with Stephen, it was so different. I had grown up a little bit. And he's right, you know, EW had been such a good company to us both. They really, really had. They paid us well. They gave us lots of tolerance. They, you know, they gave us lots of toys to play with and good budgets to go out and explore and grow with. So when it came to saying to Stephen, look, I think we've walked around Bryant Park enough. I think that we understand the market well enough. You know, we are, because we put our trust in connected TV before it was the next TV, we trusted our instincts and our ability to look into the future enough, because we'd seen how that, you know, that baby had formed. So when I said to him, I think now is the time, let's do it. it was an easy chat to have with my wife. She said, you've got 6 months to prove something out, or you're going back to getting a real job, which it's to be honest, I promised I'd never start another company after selling the last one. And then with Stephen, it was different. I remember sitting, you know, I think I was sitting at his desk in an office, and in comes his wife, and Stephen sort of slinks backwards slowly out, doors closed. And she's like, all right, what the are you trying to put into my husband's mind? Are you serious? We're about to have just another kid, and the other one's already, you know, expensive. Seriously. And I said, yeah, okay, I get all of that. I really do respect all of that. I still to this day don't think I thought about it enough when I, you know, said to Stephen, let's really do it. But I decided therefore to be as honest with her as I would have been with anyone else today, which was, look, we understand the trade. We understand what's missing. We understand what people are going to want in 2, 3, or 5 years' time. We believe enough in all of that. And however, I also would hate for you to know anything other than the statistical, factual truth about all of this. If we go about and do this, and I make Stephen walk away from his job as he's got this new kid, we have maybe a 2% chance of getting through the first year. You know, I'm not going to pretend it's anything else, you know, especially given that we knew that we were going to be self-funded. We weren't going to be able to fall back on a giant war chest or someone's money while we sort of figured out what we were going to do. We needed Origin to prove itself, you know, from day one. And that's exactly what we did. But it was, I've never had more respect for anyone in my life than I have for when his wife sat down and gave me the birds and the bees of being parents, because my wife and I, we don't have kids. We got a Shih Tzu. That's plenty for us.
I love that story. I think a lot of our listeners will like hearing that. And I love that you did that, Fred, right after you were married. That was, before that, it might've been a different outcome there. So let's talk about some of the solutions, right? And some of this may be a loaded question because it's kind of the future, but I have you guys on, I have to ask you. So talk to us about some of the current solutions that you guys have that I would say revolutionizing the way you're doing connected TV. And then what's next? What do you see as kind of next for Origin, next for the industry? Love to hear your thoughts.
Who wants to take this? Steven, you sure? I just don't like being the talker, but you know, we have right now today, we have four products in market that we're each of whom are our babies on top of Stephen's actual babies. But like, you know, the first product we launched, which is our flagship product, is called Origin Slingshot. And that works on the basis that don't just run your creative, own the airtime around your creative as well, whether it's before your ad, after your ad, or maybe a little bit at each end. And we create highly immersive content experiences, creative experiences that are designed maybe to get someone out of one certain headspace and into another before watching the brand's ad that we're positioning inside this native content experience. And we've learned over the years, and having done numerous trials and studies, quite what it takes to put someone, to make someone stop watching a show, make them assume they're going to now just get a bunch of ads back to back, but then how to re-engage them in an experience that is really what they're there to watch television for. And that's where we've managed to learn over the years with Slingshot, and that's what it does. It's either in completely custom for our brand and agency clients, or it's off the shelf short form native content that brings people's eyeballs back to the TV. It gets them out of one headspace and into another, and fundamentally more receptive to then to the commercial that they're going to see. After that, we then released the Origin Ad Studio, and that's really where we found an opportunity for brands or creative teams within a brand who don't want to spend bajillions of dollars on a single creative that needs to be generic and national. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but instead find a far more affordable creative solution for people that have many, many things to say or might want to split test 6 different taglines. So that was the Ad Studio, all of which is underpinned by our unique creative studio. And then after that, we launched Origin Slate, which was, if you've ever watched anything, linear, digital, linear, and you've seen We'll Be Back, we decided that, you know, after speaking to a couple of OEM partners, they said the problem that we have as an OEM is that people leave the channel if they're just going to be watching We'll Be Back. Can you create something to entertain them while they're gone? And so we decided to take what we had learned and we built Origin Slate from that. And then finally, our newest product, the new baby in the family, is Aperture, which is everything that we've learned about being dynamic and the ability to put real-time or close to real-time weather forecasts, for example, into Slingshot or an Ad Studio Creative. This allows brands or creative teams or media buyers to leverage the same creative dynamic sort of capabilities, but inside their ad as a sort of as a form of overlay, if you will. And of course, there are many other overlay solutions out there, all of which are, I think, actually quite brilliant. But Aperture just lives to serve a very, very different purpose. It almost hides within the creative and just pokes out here and there when a brand wants to reinforce or amplify what they're trying to say, but they want to keep it contained and on top of their beautiful bajillion dollar creative.
You know, and this question, thanks for sharing that. I have something for Stephen, you know, operating officer, right? I'm sure you're already thinking of the future. And I think it's already here. I know it's already here because of some of what our clients are asking for, of connected TV in the B2B space, Stephen, right? So you heard me talk about all I do is B2B. We have a lot of amazing B2B clients and business consumer clients, but B2B, and that's kind of the next wave. How do I reach, I'm at the office, but Fred and Stephen are at home. How do I reach those business executives at home? What's your take on that? Are you seeing a rise in that? Do you, are you adjusting? Should brands adjust the way they communicate to the business executive at home?
It's a challenge. And we have done a number of B2B deals at Connected TV. We get a number of RFPs. And it goes back to this thing that we could talk about all day is from a targeting perspective, Connected TV is one to many, right? You can buy the best third-party data, first-party data, but it might be me watching, or it might be my son watching, or my daughter, or my wife, or some other random person in my house or they're watching TV. That's not the right person you're trying to target, right? So like that's inherently this sort of this challenge is if I'm trying to reach the business decision maker in the household, like can you get the targeting? The targeting alone isn't enough, right? So if you take the targeting and the context, right? If I'm targeting a decision maker watching Bloomberg television on Connected TV, I then get closer, right? So I feel like no one has quite unlocked the key to B2B advertising on Connected TV. I think there's a lot of brands that want to have advertising Connected TV in a sort of scaled way. But I think the mix of sort of targeting context in other areas, we're getting closer, but I don't think we fully unlocked it. I know that's not a fully satisfying answer. I know many folks are trying to work on that, but like we're getting closer, but we're not quite there.
Doesn't Wyatt watch Bloomberg?
No, my son doesn't watch Bloomberg. He is a decision maker. He controls massive budgets, but he's not watching Bloomberg yet.
Exactly. Bluey, but not Bluey, but not Bloomberg, right? You're just off by a few letters there, right?
Right.
So talk to us about a decision you had to kind of guide a client down the path or a brand where, hey, this is cookie cutter. We think you should go in this direction. Any examples of a particular instance where that happened, where it paid off? You took a little bit of a risk with them?
I mean, I think it's interesting because when we started the company, everything was new, right? This is our first retail client. This is our first auto client. This is our first CPG client. And again, nothing was really sort of cookie cutter because, shitty pun intended, we hadn't sort of baked those types of cookies before. So now it's sort of interesting, as Fred liked that answer. As we sort of have scaled the company, we build on this great intelligence, right? We've done 50 retail campaigns before, so we can actually give someone something that feels very new to them, but is very deeply driven based on our experiences, our data and content and all this work we've created before. So like the process for us is seamless and requires 50 to 80% less resources, but like it feels less cookie cutter. And then I'll defer to Fred for this. For some campaigns and clients know, it isn't necessarily taking sort of a white canvas and saying, okay, you're giving us 5 days to launch a campaign instead of 30. Here are three or four different options that we know will perform and are really unique. And then allows us to sort of balance giving them something unique, but also getting stuff live very quickly in a scaled fashion.
I think you're talking about a completely different box of cookies to what Vincent, the cookie tree that Vincent's barking up. But that doesn't make it any less fascinating and interesting, Stephen. You're such an interesting guy. But where I think it is how do you educate someone into doing something incredibly new on this one format that already feels quite new? That to me is like the single biggest challenge that should exist for anybody, especially when you're, you know, a bootstrap minnow in a what is now a $30 billion shark pool, right? It's terrifying. But the one bit I will steal from Stephen's, you know, narrative and evolve on is once you've covered every vertical and you've listened to every brief and you understand what matters most to them, and then you couple that with the one thing that has been inevitably changing that we may be a little bit of a cause of, but I think just the world in general is causing it, is that something which either we said earlier or I said to someone else altogether on a different show, I don't know, is that when we set out in 2020, it was all about awareness. The goals, the RFPs, the objectives were raise awareness. And then slowly over the pandemic, 22, 23, it was also we're really trying to boost consideration for our C2B budgets. And now we're really, really very much entrenched at the performance end. And, but again, performance has many, many different definitions and meanings depending on who it is who's asking for it and what they're expecting. So for us, it was not about just pushing one of our products into someone's face. It was listening to them saying, you're telling us your objectives, like how do you plan to resolve them with just this creative? Is your targeting going to be enough? And if it's not, what's missing? And if what you're saying is missing falls squarely into one of our creative solutions, then that's wonderful. And again, that's one of the things that I think when the world was looking left and Stephen and I were looking right, that was one of the things that we spotted. There is untold quadrillions of dollars that are going into really smart plumbing, really good pipes, very good data and targeting and so on. But there hasn't been, bizarrely enough, a strong enough focus on what someone actually sees, because that is a massive driver towards the outcomes that are, you know, that people are looking for. And so what we did was say, let's make the most agile and scalable creative bolt-ons or overlays or extensions that allow them to do that. And the example, you asked for an example, we had the media buying agency for an auto client come to us in really actually quite early on in our existence and said, this is the pandemic. There are no new cars for sale. We have a used car program and we've got a spot for it. We've got a lovely 15-second ad for it, but it doesn't actually tell people why they should buy our cars versus go to the competition. And so they made it was obvious. The ad was wonderful, but they needed it to do something else or more. And that was where Slingshot came in. We built a series of assets that would be dynamically stitched and served to the viewer. And every time they saw it, it would give them a different reason why they should consider that used vehicle program. And then they still got the enjoyment of the very, very good, fun ad.
No, thank you, gentlemen. That's actually both great examples of a question on different angles that I was looking for. So before we get into some getting to know you personally, and then your closing thoughts, biggest misconceptions of connected TV.
Do you remember 2 years ago when there was that cryptic QR code ad in the Super Bowl, right? And then like, no one knew what the ad was for. Everyone went to crash the website, crash the servers and did all that. Like, again, I watch a lot of connected TV and like immediately before that happened, maybe 10 to 15% of ads on connected TV had QR codes. And then for 3 months after that, 80% of ads had QR codes on connected TV. And I don't think anyone has quite figured out the QR codes. I think the misconception that I would sort of bring up is that because I hear something, I saw someone else doing it, I don't understand the why, but I must do it myself. And in that case of QR codes, a lot of the executions were shit. They were too small. They were risk-oriented. There was no value brought for someone to activate a QR code, so they didn't. I feel like people are getting smart, but a lot of, and again, I'm not dismissive of agency and brand buyers, but sometimes they don't want to appear less intelligent to the folks that they're working for. So it's, we have to be at Hulu. We have to have a QR code. We have to do these things. And it's like, we are paying more for this, but what's the end result? The misconception is, because something worked for someone, I heard it. It's a buzzword. I have to do it everywhere. And it's not based on logic or data.
And Stephen, QI is such an interesting realm for TV, because at the end of the day, I mean, I want to pick a different misconception, but a misconceptionette based on what Stephen was saying is, you know, understanding QRs to be anything other than the simple thing that they are, which is a portal. It's just a mechanism. Right. Everyone has a phone in their hands, and with the right story, that phone will be put up to the TV screen. We did a nationwide study on this. We asked 7,000 households, what would make you scan a QR code on TV versus why wouldn't you? You know, why would you throw your phone through it? But on a similar vein, I think one of the most recent and biggest misconceptions that I feel like I've seen, and I was speaking on a panel about this not that long ago in San Francisco, is a lot of us are talking obviously about shoppable CTV, and that's great. It should be an ambition. However, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be now, but one of the mistakes I think that we're making in general is we're going from like learning to walk to giving them the means, but we're not actually thinking about the journey in between enough. You know, you can't just make something shoppable. You've got to think about the experience that lends them to it. Again, the creative story, which is where we really stand out, that actually makes them want to do something with it, as well as just asking the questions, which I think is an industry we sometimes overlook, which is, what are humans interested in doing right now? Do they want to buy on their TV? Do they want to buy on their phone? That's a really big one. You know, and is the world ready for that kind of thing? And if not, find out what are they, where are they ready? We should be pushing consumers, like that's what we do, right? We send people in directions, but we need to be listening more carefully to understanding exactly what's going to jive with them as they sit there today with their liquidity and hopefully, you know, get into buying something. So it's not that we're not there. I think as an industry, we're missing things, and it's something that we care about. You know, I describe us as creative storytellers. Something which I think is getting a little lost in advertising. It's all very factual. It's a little bit humdrum. But now that we have the chance to actually speak to people in a way that will resonate, tug on some emotional cords, et cetera, now I think the game is on.
I love those examples. And I kind of, when I always talk to my clients, partners, I'm always saying, what would make you respond to this, right? We're not going to send it that day. How many messages does it take? You're right. But the time I find my phone and I point it to the TV, the ad's gone, right? And I'm like, well, especially during the Super Bowl, I'm not going to go and scroll the website. I'm going to watch the rest of the commercials in the game, right? So we have to ask this question. This is for both of you. I'll start with you, Fred. LinkedIn. This is a question that our listeners love, and we don't ask it, they get mad. What is a LinkedIn message, Fred, that when someone reaches out to you, resonates with you, and you'll respond to? Which one that you absolutely hate? I'll start with Fred and then Stephen. Same question for you after that.
What I hate more than anything is someone who is poorly using what is evidently some kind of algorithm or artificial intelligence quote to tell me that I clearly need better janitorial services in my office. You know, like if you're going to go to the extent of writing a message to someone, which is a very personal thing, do it right. You know, it's not a place to spray and pray. And that really drives me up the wall. Where the ones I do respond to, though, are from people who have maybe read something that I've written, posted, or an op-ed or an editorial that the company has posted or something like that, and said, I read this, can we talk? You know, I find this interesting. And then in the perfect world, they'll also say, because I plan to sell to you, or I would like you to sell to me. But that's maybe taking it a step too far.
I try to give back as much effort as someone put into reaching out to me. I think there are absolutely cases where, to Fred's point, I'm sold janitorial services, I'm sold voiceover IP, and all sorts of stuff that isn't relevant. What does resonate with me is when someone took 3 minutes, not 3 seconds, right? And you mentioned whether they're selling to me or not, like they made a reference to something in my profile about where I went to school or something that seems genuine. Because I think we're in this place now, whether LinkedIn or email, there is just so many blank cold emails. And like, you're really kind of like, it's just a lot of noise, right? And if you want to be creative and break through the noise, I'll give you the call, I'll reply to you. If not, you're going to get blocked. And then please don't, if your algorithm breaks and you say dear first name instead of my name, I'm going to write back to you and have an absolute field day with you, because I think that's just so much fun.
Well, luckily, luckily, this isn't being recorded and isn't going to be heard by tens of thousands of people, but Stephen is actually very easy to sell to. He listens, honestly, if you do approach him right, he will listen. And there's a very good chance he'll become a customer, but maybe not before I've asked him why. But honestly, he does take people's goodwill, and he is a good judge by and large of knowing if, mentioning your school and where your children are right now or whatever else it is that feels personal, like, good for you. Then that does work, I guess.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always known that about Stephen. He's a great listener. But no, you're right. It's one of those things where we get a lot of people now who say, hey, I'd love to have one of my guests on your podcast. Why don't you reach out, tell us you listen to it and you like it before you reach out to us, PR agencies. That's for you. Anyway, for fun, what do you guys like to do? New York area, your access to, this great city here. Fred, starting with you, what's your weekends looking like?
Taking both of my cameras out and exploring either a park for tiny, tiny microscopic bugs or some form of landscape in town or upstate, or taking it into the city to see if there's a way to make a grotty part of Times Square look beautiful. And if not that, then sitting at my table, slowly excavating rocks, which I think might contain fossils, with a rotary tool, and then praying that my wife doesn't notice how dusty I've made the place. Those are the two things that really occupy me in my spare time.
That is one of probably the most unique answer we've ever received. For the, no pressure there, Stephen. You're probably just like me, two kids, right? Going out and about. I was at a coach, a little league game this weekend. I had my son was going for his little black belt, a 7-year-old black belt with a stripe. Anyway, talk to me about your weekend, Stephen.
So with two kids who I absolutely love dearly and are two perfect angels, a lot of my weekend is spent entertaining them and educating them and hoping that me and my wife, frankly, can say at the end of the weekend we survive. When all of that is going well, I love to completely disconnect from the computer and spend time outside hiking, walking, running, doing things like that where the weather cooperates.
I love it. Yep, that's a similar boat. Let's take each 30 seconds, if you could, closing thought, anything you want this amazing audience to know about Origin, yourself, Connected TV. Let's start with you, Fred.
I think I'll use 25 seconds to fill the time, but I would say, we wear our hearts on our sleeves and our opinions with it, but everything that we say comes from some form of objective basis, but it's not always what the industry wants to hear or what people want to hear, but it may be the cold hard truth. So I would say, if there's one thing to know about Origin is, we believe in what we say and what we do. We're not frightened to call out the behemoths who are there to squash us. And as a result, yeah, Stephen, I should have asked your permission, but we really do have an unbelievable line of sight into the future, I think, of what people are going to want and need. And also we're really good fun to work with. We believe in not being different for the sake of it.
I can see that. How about you, Stephen?
I'll just add to that, that we really love what we do and we love having conversations with people in the space who are passionate about what they do or passionate about CTV. So I don't say this as an empty offer, but if you're listening to this and curious not just about Origin, but you know, working connected TV and want to learn something about it, like do reach out to us. We love having these conversations with folks because we learn. But you know, I just feel privileged that like we are in this space, we got in it early and like be able to do something that you love every day with people that you love almost every day is like just such a privilege.
I love it. That's amazing words to close this down. Check them out, ladies and gentlemen. Origin. I'm here with the two founders of Origin, Fred Godfrey, CEO, Stephen Strong, Chief Operating Officer. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. AJ Gupta, we'll see him on another episode. This has been The Marketing Stir. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.